whenever they announced that they were removing the festival early in the year, I thought it was a great idea. I always thought that September kind of time frame was, I mean, it was super hot. My favorite part about this new date change is that it spreads out the festival calendar in Lake Charles, you know? So to have one festival like this earlier in the year, I think was a great move on their part.
Thanks for joining us on Louisiana's Playground Podcast, your roadmap to all things Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm Brady Raynard.
And I'm Jillian Quarter. We're excited to bring you the authentic stories and experiences of Southwest Louisiana. We've got all the tools you need to build your own personal Lake Charles itinerary.
Yes, we do. Coming up on episode 90, the big 90 of Louisiana's Playground Podcast, we're talking the Louisiana Food and Wine Festival, specifically the wine, and we bring on a wine sommelier, Ryan Kennedy, to kind of help demystify, if you will, the whole entire wine game. That's coming up in a great, great conversation.
But first, we're going to start the way we always do here on Louisiana's Playground, a taste of Southwest Louisiana, what we call Envie Eats.
Yeah, that sounded a little mysterious.
Did it sound like I was going to say something else?
But
throw a curveball at the last minute?
But as we always do, it's time for Envie Eats. And this week, we head to Sulphur to Creole Bar and Grill. It's the restaurant located within the Doubletree Hilton. So, but you don't have to be staying there, obviously, to go and have a great bite of food. What I love about it is that they actually named it after the Creole Nature Trail. That's where they get the Bar and Grill, because they're located at the start of the Creole Nature Trail, right by the Adventure Point. They combined a lot of their favorites throughout town and in terms of creating the menu. So you get a little bit of the best hits from a couple of local spots that they try to kind of recreate and make their own. And they serve, of course, local Gulf seafood.
Which is always a plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you'd like to hear from a local place.
Yeah. And so we opened up with the spinach and artichoke dip. We came in with high marks.
Oh my gosh. The spinach artichoke dip was so good. It was so creamy. It was delicious. It has just that little bit of salty kick that you want. But like a moment for the chips, yo. They're the like
shout out
thick. What are those called? That's gotta have a special name for that kind of tortilla chip. I guess they're like a flour tortilla chip, right?
That's kind of what I would call it.
Okay. Well, they're delicious. Like so good that I had more chips than the dip, and normally I wouldn't finish them, but I like made it stretch.
Right. That's where, so I looked at it first and I was like, oop. There's not going to be enough chips for this dip. And then you start eating, you're like, all right, maybe there's too much dip for these chips. And then you get to the end, you're like, you know what? This was perfect. It was a very large portion. It fed four of us as an appetizer, which is, you're always kind of wondering, how much is this appetizer?
Do I need to get two?
This is great. And honestly, it could be a meal for itself.
It was
cut
so
up some
good.
Chicken in there. And that's an entire meal.
I don't even need the chicken. Just it take was it just the way it comes.
Delicious. It was awesome. Cheesy, creamy, huge portion, great flavor, crunchy chips. Wonderful, wonderful spinach and artichoke dip.
Yep, yep.
And you got the beef tips, which is a new item on their menu.
Yeah, beef tips and gravy. So that's always like, you know, a staple around here, right?
Sure.
Like a Southern favorite. And I've had it at a lot of different restaurants as part of like their plate lunches. So I wanted to get it here and see what it was all about. It was really good. I like that the beef tips are cut just small enough to where they're truly bite-sized. It's not like too much of a mouthful or whatever. It's not difficult to eat in any way. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for when I'm like trying to like quickly eat a lunch, right? It was really, really good. Like incredibly tender, really well-seasoned. Perfect gravy to rice ratio. I know that also sounds silly, but sometimes you get way more rice and not enough gravy. Sometimes it's like soup. You know, like sometimes you're getting like a gumbo when that's not what you ordered,
this was
right?
not soup.
This was not that. This is true, thick, good gravy. It was quite delicious. I also had the green beans with it. And I know I get green beans a lot. People are tired of hearing me talk about green beans. Often this can be a throwaway.
Jillian Green Beans Quarter.
That's me. Often they can be kind of a throwaway side. They taste like they've been poured straight out of a can and heated up and that's it, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, I ate that too. But they were so well seasoned, really, really good. You could see the garlic in them. And they were almost kind of shredded. So not just like a chopped green bean, a cut green bean, but almost like shredded to a degree. Absolutely delicious. It just was a really good meal all the way around.
And those potatoes looked amazing.
The potatoes.
The red skin potatoes. I was like, oh my goodness.
Red skin potatoes that were so creamy, delicious. I don't know if they make them with a lot of butter or if they throw in some heavy cream with them or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what the secret is. But, you know, often when
it's
you get mashed
potatoes.
It's a good one. Whatever the secret is, it's a good one. Yeah. Often whenever you get mashed potatoes, you have to have some sort of gravy. This didn't need that. These were super creamy, super delicious. And I like a red potato. They're different. They're different than just like your regular mashed potatoes anywhere else. So I was a big fan, hands down.
And I went with, I wanted to get make sure to get some type of seafood since it is Gulf seafood. I went with the fried fish basket, which I believe it's catfish, crispy, crispy batter, huge flaky fillet of fish there as well. It was, it had a kind of a salty batter flavor, you know, from what you'd expect from fried foods, but it was not fishy, great flavor. The hush puppies, oh, I loved them. Crunchy, of course, soft middle, and they had that jalapeno flavor to them.
Little kick.
Yeah, I love, love that. Those are awesome. The fries that came with were shoestring fries. So very thin, dippable with the ketchup provided. And just overall, just a great piece of fried fish. I realize I don't get fried fish. I love
you
fried fish.
You never order fried fish.
And I love fried fish. I just don't really get it very often.
Yeah.
And so it's always a nice reminder when I'm like, oh, yeah, I really do like fried fish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is a good stop, and especially if you're coming into town, you're staying over there at the Doubletree. Plus, you can get one of those epic cookies, too.
Yes, know? And we I had one of those, too, and they were great. They even put, like, little nuts in there, too.
Theirs, and it not was bad. Awesome. Whether you're passing through and you're actually staying there or you're just need a good spot for a quick lunch or dinner, this Creole's a great spot.
From a great meal to a great guest, we welcome on Ryan Kennedy, wine director at Bodega Wine Dive. Ryan has discovered his passion for wine at just 18 years old and now serves as a self-described wine tour guide, helping guests find bottles that match their taste and personality. He's also enrolled with the Court of Master Sommeliers and has a particular focus on small production vineyards. Today, we're talking wine without intimidation. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you all so much for having me today.
Thank you. So I have a couple of quick, like rapid fire questions, right? We start off the podcast with these so that everyone gets to know how you play in Louisiana's playground a little bit better.
All right.
Okay. First up, crawfish or gumbo?
I have to go with gumbo.
Good choice.
Okay. The follow-up question to that is there a gumbo season?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously the winter time is the best time to have it, but I mean, I think you can have it all throughout the year.
Okay, then you're right up Brady's alley. That's exactly what he says.
Answers.
Yeah. Let's see if we can go, you know, four for four here.
Let's see.
Okay, poolside or beachside?
I'm going to go with poolside.
Okay, not a fan of the sand?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really
Gosh,
at all.
Are y'all the same person? Okay, here we go. Last one, concert or comedy show?
That's a tough one. I think I'm going to go with concert.
Okay. Yeah. What are you listening to? If you can go to any concert right now, what are we going to?
I wish I could get tickets to the Harry Styles show.
Fun. Oh, yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
Brady, you are not invited.
I'll gladly sit this one out.
I was going to say, it's probably not up his alley, but I would go to that for sure. We all did pretty well.
Yeah, I think so.
Good job. So Brady said it at the beginning, this is talking about wine, but without intimidation, because I am intimidated by wine. I feel so uneducated and ignorant about it that I feel that I can't talk about it at all.
I don't deserve it.
Yeah. I just wait for someone else to order wine. And then I say, ooh, I'll have that too.
That sounds good. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm intimidated by it. So how do I like feel more comfortable ordering wine somewhere?
I think the best thing to admit is that you don't know.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of people are just afraid to admit that in the first place, that they don't know anything about wine.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're at a restaurant that has like a sommelier on staff or somebody that's very knowledgeable about it, they're more than happy to help. But it's the first step is admitting that you don't know, you know?
The first step is admitting that you're wrong. Okay, got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean,
it.
And it's not to sound a bad way at all. Like,
sure.
Like my job is to help you find what you enjoy.
Well, and like you said, it's kind of almost bridging a gap that wine doesn't have to be this elitist thing. It doesn't have, you don't have to spend a ton of money to find something good.
Not at all.
That it can be for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Like my retail store, Vinami, next door to Bodega is, I mean, we have price ranges starting at like $13 a bottle.
Nice.
You know, like I try to make it, like, especially since our main selection is like European wines, which are even like harder to get into. I don't want to set the bar too high, like price point wise for people to be able to like try something new and start enjoying, you know, different wines.
Yeah.
Look, I love fancy titles. I wish I had a fancy title like sommelier. What
Exactly. We can make one up for you.
If you don't mind, let's brainstorm on that. What defines the role? What does a sommelier really do?
So I think the best way to like compare it to is like the work of a chef per se. You know, like chefs are in control of all the food. They do all the pricing. They perfect the recipes. You know, like their hands are in everything like food wise. Sommelier does the same thing, but for all the liquid in the building. So I think it's a common misconception that people are like sommeliers only do wine. Of course, that's like our main focus, but like we have our hands in the cocktail program, the beer selection, liquor selection, all that good stuff. So, you know, we're out there pricing wines, pricing cocktails, all that.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it obviously depends. Like I like to say everything in wine has an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. But you know, under some like corporate structures, they only take care of the wine. But, you know, for a small business, I have my hands in all of the liquid in the building. Gotcha. Pretty much.
So when Brady introduced you, he said that you got into this at 18. So I need to,
I need to
ask, how do you, I mean,
all right, buddy, time to fess up.
but you got into this partially, I guess, because of your family, right?
Yeah. So my family owns Bodega. And I started there at 17 as just a server with no like kind of, I don't want to say fine dining, but I didn't have like upscale dining experience like at all. And it's a pretty long story, but after about a year of working there, the sommelier at the time had relocated. And everyone kind of looked around. They're like, well, no one knows like who's going to take it over. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of raised my hand. I was like, all right, I'll do it. Knew nothing about wine. Didn't drink wine at the time. But I always found it so interesting. Mm-hmm. The first manager that I worked under at Bodega, LB Bradley, who's at Vic and Anthony's now. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was so interesting. Like he knew so much about wine. And he made it so approachable and easy to understand. And I was like, I want to be like him one day. Again, handed the wine list at 18, was like kind of figured out. I was too young to take any like official schooling. Mm-hmm. You have to be 21 to take the quartermaster sommelier. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So I was kind of, I self-taught for a while. Our wine reps really helped. I don't think they knew I wasn't 21 at the time, but we don't have to talk about that. But yeah, I self-taught for a while. And then once I turned 21, that's whenever I started doing like a formal education. And that's where I'm at now. I'm doing WSET level 3, which is kind of like a subset to the quartermaster sommeliers.
Wow. And how old are you now?
23.
Yeah. That's pretty accomplished. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
What an early start.
In this kind of way that you've kind of learned about wine, you've kind of seen it from a couple of different angles that maybe most people, especially at your age, hasn't. What are some of the misconceptions that you've noticed pretty quickly that you were able to dispel and now try to preach as, for lack of a better term, to others?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the biggest misconception about wine, which we kind of touched on, was that like it's one of these unapproachable, like elitist things.
Yeah.
obviously, I want to turn that around and get people trying new things, broadening their horizons into mainly like European wines, smaller production wines. And that's like what my wine list is set up to accomplish, is get people out of their comfort zone. I have a fun smaller misconceptions about wine. Like I think like people really don't understand like Riesling as a grape variety. Like everyone kind of assumes it's like one of these super, super sweet wines, like a Moscato.
Yeah. Moscato, which is what I call candy wine.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
that's the only one I'm really familiar with. That's my level of expertise is
gotcha.
Moscato's candy wine. And that's the one I like.
So. Yeah. I mean, like a lot of people think Riesling is a super, super like sweet grape, but whenever you start trying new ones, they have these super cool, like dry German styles that pair really well with Cajun food. I would say like, you know, some with like a little bit of sweetness pair really, really well with those. But yeah, Riesling's being misunderstood as one. Rosés are another one. People always assume rosés are sweet.
Well, okay. You mentioned Cajun food. So I have kind of a dumb question. So I always hear or see on the menu that, you know, like this fish dish pairs well with blah, or this, you know, if it's a steak, it pairs well with something else. Is Cajun food more difficult maybe to pair a wine with because it's like kind of overwhelming in flavor in general?
Don't worry, I've got this one. Actually, no. Because of the salty to undertones of it, actually pairing with a more of a sweet wine will actually give you the sweet and saltiness that you kind of, your tongue kind of craves.
Is he making that up?
He's almost exactly right.
Bam!
Almost.
Oh my gosh,
almost,
you could go take your test.
I'm going.
So I would say the biggest thing whenever you're trying to pair Cajun food is to take into account the level of spice.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say most Cajun foods are always going to be super spicy. So thing is, you're wanting to pair a sweeter wine with a higher spice level.
Okay.
The way that spice interacts with wine is that it makes it taste a lot more like alcoholic. It'll make it burn more.
Okay.
It'll make it taste more bitter. And it's going to like reduce the way that your like palate perceives like the fruitiness of that wine. So once you start increasing the sweetness level of the wine, it'll start to like balance out that spice and make it a lot more approachable and a lot more of a like enjoyable pairing.
Okay. Maybe that's why I go for the Moscato. Yeah. Because I think everything is spicy.
You know what?
So I feel like I have to go for something super
right. And I love, we've had a couple of different conversations over the 90 plus episodes that we've done where it's essentially a wine sommelier of blank. And I love that it always ends up coming back to, it's kind of, at the end of the day, you're all kind of scientists, right? Like as you kind of are balancing this and that. And
there's a lot of chemistry involved in
this. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with wine pairings, like you're wanting to balance that salt and the sweetness, the bitterness, like all the above. It's a lot more in depth than some people might think.
Now, how do you start as a wine tour guide? How do you start someone down that path when they come in and tell you, ooh, I don't know, or whether they know or don't know, how do you start that?
I would say for the people that don't know, my first question is always like, what do you like? What are you drinking? I think also with the people that don't like really understand wine that well, they have a hard time describing it, which is completely fine. Like it's my job to be able to like decipher what you're like trying to describe.
Okay.
But one of the easiest ways is to just ask, what are you pulling off the shelf? You're going to the grocery store. You're like, I want a bottle of wine tonight. What are you grabbing and what are you enjoying? And once I have that answer, I can usually pair it to something on our wine list that is similar or like comparable.
Can we do a quick exercise?
I got you.
Okay. We just set it down. This is my wife, Jillian, and I'm Brady, and we're here for some wine.
Oh, well, I have plenty of it.
Okay.
So what are we picking? What are we enjoying?
I generally buy the cheapest bottle of Moscato when I'm at the Walmarts.
I'm more of a lager drinker. I like Mexican lagers.
Okay.
Or I also enjoy the seltzers, the fruity seltzers.
That is his beverage.
Okay. One of those two.
Okay.
And for me, if I'm going for a cocktail, maybe this will help you determine what I need. If I'm going for a cocktail, I want an Amaretto Sour.
Okay. So we enjoy the sweeter wines for sure. What I'm wanting to do to get you out of your comfort zone is suggest we do like a kind of semi-sweet Riesling or like a Chenin Blanc, like a Vouvray. Okay. I think those would be two things that y'all would really enjoy.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So the same drink.
You think we could both go for the same?
I think we could make it happen.
Okay. Oh.
I think we could make it happen.
Okay. Well.
Well, I can't wait to eat the Italian food while we're there too, because it's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
It's phenomenal. When we had you guys on for Envy Eats, it was absolutely wonderful.
Let's talk about Bodega for a second.
Okay.
Yeah. So recently received Wine Spectator Award of Excellence.
Yes.
Second year in a row.
Yeah. Super
explain
exciting.
Explain that to us.
So it's done by Wine Spectator magazine, like one of the biggest wine publications, if not the biggest in the world. And what you do is you submit your wine list to them and they will judge it and put it into one of three categories. We have the first one, which requires you have at least, I believe, 95 bottle selections on your list.
Wow.
Which now we're up to about 300 now.
Impressive.
But yeah, you have to have at least 95 and it has to like kind of fit thematically, with your food selection.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had an, additional, merit for affordable wine list. So they'll go through and give extra points to restaurants that offer X amount of bottles under a certain price point.
How in the world do you curate, you know, you said 300?
Yeah, I think we're like almost 310 at this point. Yeah.
How in the world do you curate that collection?
And remember it.
Yeah, that too.
it's a lot. I mean, you're doing tastings you know, multiple times a week, you know, like you're trying to weed through all of the, you know, all the noise in the wine world to pick out wines that you think will stand out to guests. Obviously there's a lot more that goes into it, like in terms of like making you have certain wines at certain price points, making sure that you have stuff that pairs with certain dishes on your menu. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of wine. It's a lot of wine to remember.
Yeah, and so within Bodega, what services are there? Because it's more than just a restaurant. It's more than just a place to grab wine. What services are provided?
So in terms of like getting people to experience new wines, we offer a selection of like wine flights mm-hmm. for people to try. They all have a theme to them. We let people try to branch out with those wine flights. We do fun like blind flights on Saturdays. We'll pour you three wines. We won't tell you what you are, but if you guess two out of three, we'll give you your flight for free. We also do tastings next door at Vin on Me on Wednesdays, almost every Wednesday. All of these things will get you try more wines, like more wines in front of you, so that you can kind of sharpen your palate and experience new things and find out new favorites.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
So are of the 300, let's say that you have, is a good number of those local-ish?
I would say our list is equally split between domestic wines like produced within the United States mm-hmm. and European wines and wines from outside of the country.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Any Louisiana vineyards?
I do not have any right now.
There aren't that many, to be fair. Right.
Louisiana is a very hard, like nearly impossible place to grow to grow wine.
Yeah.
It's it like tough. The soil is almost like too fertile and the climate mm-hmm. is very, very harsh for grape growing.
It turns them into raisins.
It's more of a West Coast.
It's a little hot out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. More of a West Coast thing, right?
Yes, for sure. West Coast. And you can get some cool wines on the East Coast as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
But yeah.
Well, look, that kind of ties pretty good with you. Speaking of the weather, the Louisiana Food and Wine Festival this year, the last few years, it's been kind of later in the year, but there wanted to be a switch and wanted to get into much more Louisiana, nice, great March weather. And so this year it's been moved to March 12th through 15th. Why do you think that move is going to be so good for fan experience?
I whenever they announced that they were moving the festival early in the year, I thought it was a great idea. Mm-hmm. I always thought that September kind of time frame was super hot.
Crazy hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I will say planning stuff to Louisiana weather is always unpredictable.
Fair.
We do have all seasons in 1 week.
Exactly. So. My favorite part about this new date change is that it spreads out the festival calendar in Lake Charles. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff is focused later in the year. And I think it can be a little overwhelming or even hard to like get tickets to be able to go to all of these mm-hmm. Like back to back to back like that.
Yeah.
So to have one festival like this earlier in the year, I think was a great move on their part.
Well, you've been a participant the last few years, and so the structure remains the same, even though the dates are a little different. The weather should be nicer. How do visitors to the festival, and obviously people here, but festival goers, how do festival goers best attack it to get the most of the event, do you feel like?
So, I mean, there's a lot of things offered throughout, I think it's like 4 days now. Throughout the 4-day event. But I'll say if you're going to like the two main tasting events, Friday and Saturday, my best advice is to show up to the festival, find your first wine booth, grab you a glass of wine, and then make a lap around the entire festival. Mm-hmm. Take note of what wineries are there, what food places are there. And then once you have an idea of like places that pique your interest, that's where you want to start.
Okay.
You know, start with the places that pique your interest. Those are going to be the places that you remember the most, for sure.
We've never done it that way, Brady. That's the way we should be doing it. What we do is simply try every single thing in a big circle. And I think it's not the best use of our time.
No. And I'll tell you this, the second loop, not getting something in each one, but
the second time.
But do the loop again because
you forget.
You go blind. Oh, yeah. And as you do something, you forget that you saw this.
Right.
And mm-hmm. you
take pictures.
Yeah.
Take pictures of the things that you enjoy.
Yeah.
For sure.
I like that. And I think something that's really cool is that you get exclusive one-on-one access to each of these vendors that are there that you
really
normally
cool.
wouldn't
yeah.
get.
Yeah.
And for getting sure. questions. Like we've mentioned it a couple times. We learned about like a sweet cream liqueur one time that was a really cool that we had never heard of before. We learned, you know, you talk to these people and you learn different things. And so the event itself is one of my favorites because of that. It's just laid back and relaxed, but fun.
Yes. 100%. That's probably my favorite part about it, is that it's very casual, very, very easygoing.
So you're a young man, and I'm sure you have big hopes and dreams for the future of wine in Lake Charles, right? Because this is home for you, right?
Yes, it is.
So what do you think that the food and wine scene in Lake Charles is going to become? What's the biggest growth that's happening right now?
I think the easiest way to answer that is to look at big cities, mm-hmm. because it's always there's always national trends, but the big cities are going to be the ones that experience it first, and mm-hmm. then it'll trickle down into smaller towns like Lake Charles. I'm starting to see a little bit of it now, but like more people getting interested in European wines, more mm-hmm. people being interested in cleaner styles of wine, stuff with like minimal intervention, stuff like mm-hmm. that. And then people interested in like small family brands.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a result of just culture in Lake Charles itself, or the culture that I've kind of started to manifest at Bodega and Vidalia.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something to that. People like to feel somehow more connected to it. So if it's a smaller, more intimate thing, whether that's wine or, you know, a restaurant they're going to or something like that, I think people really feel some kind of connection to it.
No, for sure. And I really think you can like taste the level of like craftsmanship that goes mm-hmm. into these wines. You brought up having like local wineries earlier.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, since we don't have like really any local wineries that sure. I can support, I like to compare like these small wineries to supporting local.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like these are like small family brands that maybe have like five people working for them, you know, and they're putting their entire heart and soul into their product. And you can really taste that.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And what I do love about wine and appreciate it about the most is that it's one of the few things that we eat, consume, that has been around for so long. And and while I'm sure the style of doing it has changed as technology has increased, it's, you know, the roots for wine go back as far as just about anything else outside of like eating this protein or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, whenever you start going into like the European countries and looking at like their styles of wine, like it's what's been around for centuries at this point.
Yeah.
Doing it the same way they did hundreds of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Like especially the French, they're very stubborn. They won't change any of their laws. It's all very
this
like
this is the way we do
this
it.
This is how we've done it for years. Yeah. And this is how we will almost always
There's
do it.
There's an art to that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So can you leave us with one wine fact that will make us sound smarter whenever we're at dinner?
Okay, I don't want to say it's a fact per se, but my biggest piece of advice for being able to communicate wine better
mm-hmm.
is to learn what you like and learn how to describe what you like.
Okay.
Biggest things, like there's five main like characteristics of wine that you should know. So you have sweetness, alcohol, tannin, acid, and body. And then once you learn those five characteristics and what side of the spectrum you enjoy with those, you're going to have an easier time explaining to the sommelier on staff like what you enjoy. You're like, oh, I like a wine that's super, super dry, that's high in tannin. Or like, I like a lighter style of wine that's a little bit thinner, like a lighter body wine. That's going to help you be able to communicate what you enjoy better with a sommelier on staff or something.
I got to go home and do homework.
Hey, well, good thing I've already got two of the three down, a tannin body.
Oh, stop. Oh,
there you go.
Stop. No, sir. No, but I do feel like I need to go home and do some homework a little
sure.
bit and then come visit you and you can help me curate my own personal wine list.
Yeah. I think another good set of advice is to always drink with intention, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not always, but whenever you're going and trying new wines and stuff, like, taste that wine and be like, okay, why do I like this? Why mm-hmm. do I not like this? Like, be able to just, don't like just write off, be like, oh, I hate this wine.
Sure.
Like, be able to explain like why you don't like it. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's something that a lot of people will kind of pass up, is understanding the why.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Ryan for joining us here on the show. But the biggest thank you of all goes out to you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating or a review.
Of course, that helps us grow our audience and further share the unique experiences that Lake Charles and all of Southwest Louisiana have to offer. Go to visit lakecharles.org/podcast for more episodes, advice on where to eat, and events that are happening this weekend. I'm Jillian Corder.
And I'm Brady Raynard. Thanks again for coming to play at Louisiana's Playground.
Sit here.